Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Sway.
Biblical disgusting display.
Tonight, we got them. Goldie and the Salt.
This is a biblical disgusting display.
And it starts right now.
Oh, boy. It's already going great. Welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. And today, we're going to hate construction because it's going on in my basement, so you're going to hear a lot of noise.
Yeah, I love that you've hired this crew that only shows up when there's a podcast and then immediately stops when we say cut.
Exactly. That's very convenient.
Perfect.
And of course, I have no, you know, say or no knowledge really of what's happening. I thought that they were working somewhere else. And then it was told to me this morning that they would be right in here drilling stuff into walls. So you're going to have to deal with it. Anyway, welcome back. Boy, we had a good episode last week. A lot of fun.
It was fun.
Fun things to talk about. And we'll get to an email later that we got about last week. And again, yeah, a reminder, please send us any emails, any thoughts, comments, top five suggestions to a typical disgusting display at gmail.com. Yeah, and as we say,
or if anyone is married to the construction crew and simply wants to pass along a message, like, you know, don't forget to pick up Danielle at 3 from figure skating, or
I can get that message to them.
Here's a stop and shop list. Just email that.
And today's the day for it. Today is the day for that. Yeah, the drilling just sounds like epic diarrhea farts below me. I don't know how it sounds through the microphone, but if you get that, it's not me, sadly. I wish it was, but it's not.
Great cover, though, for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect cover.
That's funny.
You know, we talk a lot about writing on the show, because that's what it's about, and we are writers, but also we are consumers of entertainment. We are fans, I think, first and foremost. We've been,
yeah,
you know, watching TV and movies our whole life, probably more than most people.
And let me add, like most fans, we hate it.
Yeah, right. And all we do is criticize everything. Everything that people are making for us that we can watch for free, we hate.
We hate the management. We hate the players.
Yep.
We hate the team.
We hate the fans.
We hate going to the stadium.
We hate
every aspect of it, which is why we're such huge fans.
Yes, yes. And we hate other fans.
Oh, so that's the worst.
Yeah, they're the worst. Our fan base is terrible. But there was something that I was a big fan of, as many people were, that I felt like it was worth talking about. So HBO Max, I guess just in January, they have now put the show ER up on their site. So you can watch all of ER now on HBO Max.
Gen Z, now's your chance.
Now's your chance.
Put your phone down and get absorbed in a one-hour hospital drama where a tank goes to the hospital.
I don't remember that one. Did that happen?
I think that's a famous one where there's like a tank rolling down the street. Anyway, please.
Oh, my God. I do not remember that. I'll have to look out for that one.
You'll know from the tank.
Yes, I think the tank will be my clue.
Giveaway.
This might be the episode Goldie was talking about.
When you see the tank, You'll know that yes. there's a tank in the episode.
All right. And the tank will look sick, apparently. So I started, and ER was one of those unicorns. This was back when NBC had, there's the hammering, NBC had more power than our government in the 90s. Like,
yes.
NBC Friends. Told us, hey, there's this hospital drama that's going to be premiering Thursday night at 10. We think you might enjoy it. And 50 million people said, okay, and they just never stopped watching it. So ER was one of those rare shows that from right out of the gate, they were a huge smash. And of course, it's the show that launched George Clooney.
It's the whole reason we continue to tolerate George Clooney.
That's right. He won us over. And by the way, George Clooney, he had this role. I mean, he must have been salivating for it because he was like the kids doctor at the ER. So every episode, it's like the handsomest guy on earth holding like a small black child, like, I'm going to save you. And it's like, I love this guy. He's the best. It's just what a great opportunity for him. And you know, of course, he sizzles on screen. Let me say it. He sizzles. But it was an interesting thing. So I started rewatching it because I loved it when it came out. And it was sort of known for being, it's edgier and there's more blood and there, you know, people actually die. And it's really what an ER is like. So I started watching it again with that memory, that distant memory now in my head. And of course, it's when you watch it now, like it's fine, but it's totally a Hollywood thing. And it's just a little cutesy and precious and all the stuff that I didn't really notice in the moment. But the biggest thing that I noticed, and it's the reason that I'm still I continue to watch the episodes now on HBO, is that the problems of the mid-90s seem like nothing compared to the problems of today. So you're watching this thing, and you know, as we lived through the 90s, we were also upset, and there was grunge, and everything was dark, and oh, my life. And now you look back at the 90s, and you're like, what the fuck were we so angry about? Like, that might have been the peak, and we didn't know it. And like, here's a whole hospital show every week, and they're like, oh my God, here comes in, you know, another car crash, another alcohol, you know, overdose or whatever. And it's like, you didn't have COVID. You had nothing to worry about. No. This hospital is totally empty by today's standards, and you got the best-looking doctor in the world, like, running around with little multiracial kids in his arms. It was a great time because we felt like we were wrong. But we felt like things were moving in the right direction. It seemed like racial progress was happening in the 90s. It seemed like women were, you know, stepping to the fore and getting more opportunities in the 90s. And then, of course, now we're living in this weird dark age and we've somehow gone backwards. But I'm watching ER for the nostalgia and I'm really enjoying it. So I wanted to alert our fans that ER is now out there on HBO Max. If you want to get into it, please do. If you already watched it, I think you'll enjoy watching it again. So thank you, HBO Max, for bringing that to
you. It is a great point that I've noticed as well, that any show you watch now, the problems in the show are less than my problems. It's you know, like you're watching The Sopranos and you're like, yo, the collections are down. It's like, my kids missed a year of school.
The collections are down.
First joke of the day.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, we're not going to get that garbage contract. My kids may never see a friend again.
I can't go to a restaurant without getting deathly ill. Have fun at Vesuvio, you prick.
Vesuvio. Yeah, also, Artie hasn't updated the menu in a while. That's a real problem.
Sorry. If I want their food, I have to be at the mercy of someone driving like a 2011 Ford Mustang around and watch them on a fucking Black Mirror map to see if I get to eat tonight.
So true.
Oh, Black Mirror actually might be the one show where the problems are as significant as they are.
I can't. I actually watched two episodes of Black Mirror and I got so spooked I had to stop. I was I can't.
So
the
great
one with the Alzheimer's and the video game. I was like, this is... I'm at risk of going insane. If I think about this anymore, like I can't, I have to just compartmentalize it. Like, you know, like someone blown up by a landmine or something.
Like, wow, I really love that show.
That show's great.
It's great,
but it is spooky.
I can't watch it.
Yeah, you're right. I would recommend, if you want to watch one, the one with the Jesse Plemons and the sort of Star Trek style ship. That was fantastic.
Yes.
But there's so many great ones. Anyway, so we had this talk of ER kind of flows nicely into something you wanted to talk about today, Goldie.
Well, it's in the medical field, but so, you know, my body is just falling apart. Like, I literally...
Same.
I literally crazy glued two of my toenails back together because it's like you just can't get medical attention anymore. Like to go into the medical office, you're risking so much more than it's worth. And I had these two toenails that were coming apart. I just crazy glued them together. By the way, totally worked.
Yeah,
wow.
True.
They fully healed. I had so much dry skin on my knuckles. I took a pumice stone. You know what that is? It's like a moon rock. It's like this harsh moon rock. I just scraped it off and then put tons of Vaseline on my hands. Like, I'm doing what they're doing in your basement. I'm doing that to my body, like, at home with no supervision.
Yes, good timing.
Yeah, like, I'm...
It really was.
You know, I've given up on getting medical... My gums are receding, so I do have to go in next week because, like, I think my bottom front teeth may fall out. I may need dentures, so I'm getting that. Anyway, my body is falling apart. Yeah. But one of the things... because I'm approaching 50, my doctor wanted me to get a colonoscopy. Yeah. And I just said, like, right now I'm not going into a medical facility for this elective procedure. It just feels like the risk is greater than the reward. So there's this thing called the Cologuard test,
which
is basically...
shitting in a box.
Yeah, you do a stool sample at home, you put it in a box, you send it to a lab, and with over 90% accuracy, they can tell you if there's a problem, supposedly. Could be a scam. Anyway, so
it could be just a guy who likes shit.
Right. So I get the kit. Okay. And so you open the kit and here's what's in the kit. It's like this kind of bridge that goes over your toilet seat, a Tupperware that's about, you know, like maybe a 12-inch, 10-inch circumference that fits in the bridge, the sunken bridge, and then this chemical. So what you're supposed to do is put the bridge over your toilet, put the Tupperware in the bridge, poop in the Tupperware, and then pour the chemical on it, close the Tupperware, put it in the box. So that's clear, right? Geez. You get
yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I put the bridge on, I put the thing. So the first thing I notice is that, like, I've never really tried to poop for accuracy. You know what I mean? Like, I've never tried to hit something with it.
There's
so
no
it's
target.
Like, I don't actually know where my butthole is, right? Like, I have a decent idea, but, like, I don't really know, and I don't really understand the trajectory of my poop. I've just
never
given it any thought. So already, I'm, as we said before, I'm flying blind. I feel like the instruments have gone out. I'm JFK Jr. in the fog. I'm just
God.
Come on.
I'd like to think you were Sully over the Hudson. Let's give you something a little more uplifting.
Yeah. He's a real hero.
I'm trying to land this thing with zero calibration. Okay. So, and then they say, like, you know, don't poop too much in this thing. And it's like, I don't know how much is coming out. Like, that's part of the mystery.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a lot, sometimes there's a little. But you don't know till you're done.
No.
So, like, I can tell you after I'm done if it's too much. And I'm powerless to stop, you know, in the middle of this. So the whole thing's already ridiculous.
Yes.
But I do it. I get the thing in the thing, I pour the chemical over it, and I seal it shut, and I'm an obsessive compulsive person, so I'm like checking the snap, you know.
Yeah, you better.
Pack it in the box, pack it away nicely, bring it to the UPS place, kind of feeling weird, like, so here's a box of shit.
What can Brown do for you?
Exactly.
Wow.
So then send it off and then kind of nervous waiting, like, am I going to hear some bad news? Because it's like, I eat too many cured meats and I know this. And it's like, is this what's going to kill me or not? Anyway, so I get a message. It's from the lab and it's like, we need to talk. And I'm like,
wow.
Like, here it is.
Yep.
I'm dead.
This is how it ends.
I call the guy back. And he says, are you this person or this, you know, social security, all the stuff. And I'm like, yes, that's me. And he says, well, I have some bad news for you. And of course, my stomach sinks. And he's like, your sample exploded in the box.
Of course it did.
Oh, so, my God.
Some guy opened just fucking a dynamite cannon of shit. And I was just picturing, you know, like, it's like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, there are probably thousands of shit boxes every day, and some poor soul's job is to just cut them open. And you got to figure a percentage is just exploded in the box.
Yeah.
In the box.
Like, apparently.
It's probably like 15%. So it's just like,
oh my
exploded
God.
Shit box, exploded shit box, exploded shit. So anyway, then I had to redo the whole thing. The results came back. I'm totally fine.
We're healthy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
great news.
So I like Cologuard. I'd recommend it to anyone. God. And I just want to give a tip of the cap to the poor soul whose job it is to open Cologuard boxes. And I just wish them a day of sealed containers.
Yeah, that's very nice. Am I smelling a high note? That is an amazing tale. And by the way, so the second time you did it, did you feel like more comfortable? Like, okay, I did it last time. I could do it again.
Yeah.
I could now blindfolded, suspended 20 feet in the air, hit the Cologuard container.
You now know where your butt
I
is.
I love that. The confidence. The confidence, like dropping rocks off a highway over
You know, there. Ronnie from Jersey Shore, one shot, son.
That is awesome. Oh, my God. What an adventure. Well, we're certainly glad you're healthy.
Yes,
and
for sure.
Yeah. You know what? You're healthy enough now for weeks and weeks to do some Johnny jokes.
Now, brought to you by Cologuard, it's Johnny's!
That was a little poppy on the high end, but that's okay. We appreciate the enthusiasms. The enthusiasms. All right. Okay, what do we have today from the wild world of the news? Wild stuff.
Well, once again, these are in the style of Johnny Carson for the new listeners.
Jonathan Lindhorst Carson. I don't know his middle name.
Oh.
Here we go. Okay. Well, here's an interesting story. Former First Lady Melania Trump is putting an autographed hat up for auction for a cool $250,000. Yeah, wow. The hat is fashionable, lightweight, and has a wide brim, perfect for blocking out a disgusting husband. Lightly jabbing my way in. All right, let's see what we got.
I like it.
Let's see what we got next. There's some weather news. A powerful winter storm in the south has left 90,000 people without power for almost 2 days. Huh, that's nothing. As a married man, I've been without power since the day I said I do.
Very Johnny.
My friend is a winner.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Let's see if I can buy it back here with something. Oh, here we go. An interesting story. A turtle from St. Helena named Jonathan just turned 190 years old, making him the oldest living turtle on Earth. When Jonathan passes away, the title of oldest living turtle will pass on to his brother, Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell. Very turtle-like. And now, inspired by Goldie each week, I think I was going to read a joke that I think we'd have to cut out because it's oh boy, it's on the edge. Let me read it and then we'll cut it out. Here we go.
Okay.
Government officials in China have made the decision to cull over 2,000 hamsters due to COVID concerns. Yeah. And pet owners are furious. Restaurant owners, however.
I think you're okay.
Maybe we'll cut that one. All right, let me close.
If there's a roofer named Nick, your wife is asking,
what time will you be home for dinner? Okay, last one, and thanks. Inspired by Goldie, I'm going to do a normie here for the last one. Here's one in the style of Norm MacDonald. Okay, some sad news from Hollywood. As Jason Momoa and Lisa Bonet have split after 16.
Hey, gone!
That's a little early.
That's nobody's gone. They just split up.
The couple's gone.
Okay, they've split. Jason Momoa and Lisa Bonet have split after 16 years of dating. Yeah, the couple asked that the media respect their privacy at this time while they each have sex with anyone they want.
Yes.
All right, other
Johnny. You know, that's a great batch of jokes. I'm jealous.
Well done.
Thank you, sir.
I'm envious.
I'm green.
I wish that I had the same. Well, here we go. Let's find out.
You always do. You always do.
Okay. Yes, yes.
Madame Tussauds Museum. A Las Vegas institution, by the way, has created a wax figure of Joe Biden. Yeah, a wax figure of Joe Biden. It's so realistic, you could swear it was a lifeless wax figure.
I like it.
Even
the construction guys like it.
Yeah, they're clapping too.
Oh, that's good. Well, moving on. And just to show I'm nonpartisan here, I give it to Bob. I'm an equal opportunity offender.
Oh,
the New York Attorney General's office is accusing Donald Trump of corporate fraud, saying he forged the numbers and vastly overstated his assets. Trump responded, "It's just another witch hunt against 34-year-olds with 14-inch penises."
That sounds like a lie, too.
Yeah, you're getting the pattern. All right. In order to combat supply chain shortages, the U.S. government has lifted the ban on teenagers driving big rig trucks. Oh, yeah, boy. Teenagers driving trucks. Yeah. This should help get the economy back on its feet unless their moms ground them. Okay. They won't be able to. Here we go. Staggering to the finish line.
Okay.
A potentially hazardous asteroid bigger than the tallest building will pass close to Earth on Tuesday. It's so big, if our planet collides with it, it could destroy the entire Earth and actually wake Ed.
Those are great.
I love it. You know, there are a couple of times when I've wanted to incorporate Ed, and I'm glad you did. The Ed door is now open.
Yeah, Ed's, it's all, I mean, when you looked at the stories this week, it was just a barren patch of earth. There was nothing worth.
Well, there was a great story for me that I was trying to write a joke about, and then I just realized, well, no, I should just live with it as good news, which is there was a study that they found that several compounds in cannabis prevent healthy cells from being infected with COVID.
There's
never better news for me than that.
Yeah.
That was all I could do was sing zippity doo dah after that.
Yeah. I mean, you should just walk through the COVID ward.
I know.
Blissfully.
Just arms out like Kevin Costner in Dances with Wolves. Come and get
you guys
me.
Should have smoked more pot. You blew it. It's your fault. You fucking sober loser.
I've been battling COVID since 1990. Yeah. So we had an email this week that I think we wanted to highlight. It was based on something we talked about last week. We were talking about the top five sporting events we wish we'd attended. I bared my soul and made a confession that I left the greatest Patriots game of all time, the Super Bowl, where they came back from 28-3. I left at halftime because I was so mad that they were losing. So one of our listeners sent in an email that, JC, I'd love you to read that.
Yes. Okay. So this is, and I don't know if this is a fake name, but his name is Kevin Botch.
So, why would that be?
Because he botched.
It just sounds like
this.
Exactly our target audience.
I know, totally.
All right, he says, "Hey team, I just finished listening to the episode in which Alec comes clean about leaving the Super Bowl early. You have no idea the weight you've lifted off of my shoulders. As I too had a similar blunder. I'm a huge Philadelphia sports fan, and back in 2000, I had the opportunity to see the Eagles play the Giants on the road. They were getting their asses kicked the entire game. So much so that I actually ended up on TV after a Mario Manningham touchdown because Fox scanned the crowd looking for deflated Eagles fans, and I elected to wear my Dawkins jersey.
That's a great badge of honor, by the way, to be the face of just failure of the team that they scanned. You look so miserable. They find you and go, look.
That's already great. And by the way, did we get the year right? I think you said 2000, but it was probably more like 2010. Maybe he wrote it
wrong. It says 2000. All right. Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Okay. The Giants scored more touchdowns, and with 7 minutes left and a 21-point deficit, we decided it was time to leave. That's exactly when Michael Vick and the Eagles decided it was time to wake up. I had texted my mom and told her we were leaving. She kept texting me after each ensuing touchdown, "Go back inside," as we walked past hundreds of grinning Giants fans who were all shouting and laughing at us. When we got to the car, we turned on the radio to listen to what was happening. At the moment, the Giants were lining up to punt it to, and for their sake, hopefully away from DeSean Jackson. Jackson bobbled the catch, but scooped it up and ran it back for a game-winning touchdown as time expired on what is now known as the Miracle on Meadowlands 2. I happened to stumble upon the ESPYs a few weeks later, and if I'm not mistaken, it was awarded Play of the Year. It's regarded as the greatest comeback in team history.
Yep.
I appreciate your bravery in sharing your harrowing tale. Just know that you're not alone. Though yours is most certainly worse. Thank you. Thank you to the three of you for doing this podcast. I love it and look forward to it every week. The "he gone" bits get me every time. All the best, Kevin.
That's very nice.
Let's see if he liked the Jason Momoa one, though.
I know. I was like, should I get this?
And by the way, JC, whenever you read these emails, you have a great opportunity to just add in, P.S., JC is my favorite part of the show.
If you ever hear anything like that, I have added it.
By the way,
a lot of people say that.
I'm a buyer for an endless amount of these stories. Anyone wants to email in about leaving anything early, right before it turned great? Please.
You know, so, and that is a great email, and thank you for sending it to us. Yeah. And send us any and all emails at atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com. But Goldie, you bringing that up, and I talked about the Falcons, my leaving, and being watched by Mike Singletary, the eyes of Mike Singletary as I left in shame, only to have them come back and win. Sadly, that is not my only story like that. In 2013, in November, our friend Goldie, Todd Kidder, and I went to a Patriots game, and it was the fucking coldest I've ever been in my life. It was so cold that night. Yeah. But so we went to this game. They were playing the Peyton Manning Broncos. Okay. And in the first half, the Pats were just getting their asses kicked, just destroyed, and it was freezing, and Todd and I looked at each other and said, let's leave. So we get in the car, and we're driving from the stadium, Gillette, back to Cape Cod, which is like almost an hour drive, so we're listening to the game on the radio. Sure enough, second half, Pats just turn it on. They start scoring on every possession and end up winning in overtime in what was probably like their greatest regular season comeback of all time. So I've missed their greatest... That's me farting this time. That's not the destruction people. I'm so annoyed with myself.
I'm
so
detecting a pattern that you should just go to important games and leave.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Well, the thing
sacrifice.
Is... And I will add to my... I don't know if it's... God damn these people downstairs. I swear to Christ, I've never hated people that I can't see or have never talked to. But I went to... to... God damn you. Now we're at the 78 screws part of the construction downstairs. I went to the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl, which was awesome. And I got there 2 hours early because that's the kind of person I am. I was by myself because I could only get one ticket from Fox. I never moved from my seat for the entire game, not to piss, not to get a beer, not to do anything. I probably could have done that in the bathroom.
Right.
But that game was spectacular. But it takes something out of you. It's like, you know how they say like running a marathon takes like X amount of weeks or a year on your life.
Yes.
I feel like sitting there and being so stressed for like 5 hours straight, it's like wearing on you. So the times when I disconnected, I was like, that's gone. That's forget it. I'm not doing that anymore.
Yes.
You know, I used to run marathons.
Yes.
And I was in my 20s, I was pretty good at it. But so I finished, I went up to Anchorage, Alaska with my buddy, and we ran this marathon. I finished 16th. It's not like they get
It's
not like the Kenyans go up there, though. You know what I mean? It's not like the world's talented runners go up there. But
still.
So I finished 16th, and then my buddy finished the race like 2.5 hours later. And then the rest of the week, we had all these plans to like go see the Portage Glacier and do this kayak expedition in Prince William Sound, all this stuff. So we go to the Portage Glacier, and part of it is you have to like walk up the thing. And it was at that moment that I realized that I had confused glaciers and icebergs in my mind. And I was hoping to see an iceberg. And it's like, 'cause the glacier is just like a snowy hill. It's nothing.
Just a landmark.
Whereas like an iceberg is like what hit the Titanic. And you're not seeing that. Anyway, so we were going up the Portage Glacier, and my buddy's like, I can't walk. I have to go in a wheelchair. You have to push me. And I'm like, I fucking ran the marathon too, and I can walk. And he's like, no, man, my legs really hurt. I can't walk. So I'm pushing him in the wheelchair up this glacier. And I get like 2 miles. I'm exhausted because I just ran a marathon like 3 years ago. I'm exhausted. And then this forest ranger comes running the other direction. He's like, a bear just attacked a moose. You need to go back.
Run.
And so having just run this marathon, I'm now on the ice pushing my friend in a wheelchair the 2 miles back on this dirt trail. And the whole way I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, my fucking legs are killing me too. And he's like, I swear to God, I can't walk. And I'm like bawling him out in not a jokey way, like more than I've ever yelled at anyone. I'm like, you're an asshole. I'm not,
a man anyway.
Yeah. And so anyway, so cut to like, the rest of the trip's a little tense because of the incident, because we're camping together in a tent or whatever. We get back to our homes, and then I get a call 3 days later from him. He goes, just so you know, I just got back from the doctor. I have 2 broken legs.
You're like, you fake baby. Get up, you child.
I've just been yelling at a guy with 2 broken legs.
Oh, did you ask him to send you the x-rays?
No. I trusted him.
Oh, my God. That is great. Holy shit. Really funny. That's very funny. And by the way, let me say a word of defense of glaciers. They're beautiful. Glaciers are awesome. It's an ice wall. It's not just a snowy hill. I've been to the, I believe it's called like the Petito Moreno Glacier down in South America, Tal and I went, and it was gorgeous. Gorgeous.
I completely disagree. And when you hear about climate change and they try to stress you out by saying the glaciers are melting, I no longer care about that.
Oh, no.
You should. It's a big problem. It's a big problem.
Well, anyway, most of it is, but I don't care about the glaciers.
Well, you
they're
can
not
talk,
cool.
You can talk about that with next week's guest on the show. Greta Thunberg will be here. No, I'm just kidding. I would love that, by the way. I love her. While we're here, why don't we tease that? Next week, we do have a guest. We might as well tease it at this point in the show. We're very excited. We're going to have Mike Scully, former Simpsons showrunner Mike Scully. We've worked with him. We've worked under him, with him. He now runs
against him.
Against him. We worked very hard against him. He destroyed us. But he runs Duncanville now. We're going to have him on here. Here he's going to do some Johnny jokes. It's going to be great. He's so funny. We love him. We can't wait for that next week. Yes. This week, we're going to try something a little different for our theme today. Because, of course, you know, our sort of goal and mission on this show is to encourage or discourage young writers from doing what they do, or kind of giving them a realistic. Oh my God, these people downstairs! Jesus Christ! And it's just hitting the noon hour now, so I'm hoping like they'll be like, "That's lunch."
Hopefully,
it doesn't. The drill doesn't. The drill doesn't have the sound of a "That's lunch" kind of drilling.
Right.
Anyway,
you found the one construction crew that's determined to work really hard.
Yeah, we're gonna do it for you. We work through lunch, no problem.
No lunch, guys. Not when we've got this much loud drilling to do.
We've got to work on this basement in Alex Cottage. We got to get it done now. Nobody's getting a grinder today until we finish this. Grinders regional for a sub sandwich here.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Anyway, so we like to encourage writers, talk to them about the process, and we've talked about scripts, spec scripts, and agents, and executives, and all that kind of stuff. But what we want to talk about today is specifically one show. We want to do a deep dive, as the kids say, a deep dive into the Cheers pilot. Now, obviously, Cheers was a great NBC show. I guess NBC is our theme today. NBC show from the 80s stretched into the 90s. It ran for 11 seasons. It won all kinds of Emmys for acting, for writing, for the show itself. It was, you know, one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. And Goldie and I are from the Boston area, and the Cheers takes place in Boston. So it was an important show to everyone in Boston. Was hyped about Cheers from the minute it premiered, although it wasn't a hit its first season. But we want to look today at the pilot because it's an excellent pilot. So we want to kind of go through it step by step and talk about some of the things that the writers were trying, some of the things that they really nailed, and maybe a couple things that they were a little bit muddled. But anyway, that's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about the Cheers pilot. So let's just get into it.
Yeah. And one of the things that's most impressive to me just rewatching it is it all takes place on one set.
Yeah.
Yes. So I mean, I'm in awe of the skill of just doing this entire series that worked in one place because they so rarely left.
Totally. They hardly ever. I think they had a couple episodes where they would go to one person's apartment or another, but it was at like 98-99% in this bar set. You're right. And we've talked about this before on the show. It's a multicam, so it's not a single cam. It's a multicam sitcom. And we've talked about how multicams are kind of like stage plays. And nothing is more like a stage play than Cheers because you have, as you said, the one set. So let's just get into it. And right from the start of the show, it starts with something that's called a cold open. And now a lot of you probably know what that is. But for those of you who don't, a cold open is like when the show just starts. Like it starts right out of the show before it or right out of a commercial. It doesn't open with a catchy theme or anything like that. They start the dialogue and the action right away. So and SNL famously has cold opens where they just kind of, you know, start out of nothing. So they start in the bar and the only person there is Sam Malone, who's like the main character, played incredibly well by Ted Danson.
Yeah.
And a young kid.
Wait, and then can I add?
Yeah, sure.
Then, one of the weirdest looking kids you'll ever see comes in.
A very weird looking kid who I feel like a bizarre looking teen man
who's somehow 80 and 14 at the same time with distracting freckles and teeth walks in. So already you're like, What?
And it in a windbreaker that was the color red that only existed in 1982. Like, it was just such a specific kind of windbreaker. So this little weird kid wanders into the bar.
Something out of a Mike White drama.
Yes.
That you're just... So you're going, is this a show about aliens or what?
So this kid walks in and... The joke is he's trying to get a beer, but he's clearly like a young kid. So he presents a fake ID to Sam that makes him way older than he has any right to be. And Sam, of course, being Sam, kind of is playful, and he plays along with him a little bit and says, oh, well, you must have served in Vietnam. And the kid's like, oh, yeah, you know, I did. And Sam politely sort of denies him the beer, and the kid tells a funny joke about, like, you know, I come home after the war and this is the treatment I get, which at the time was probably a pretty edgy joke about Vietnam, because we're only
He says, how was the war, how, you know, and he says it was gross. Like, that's what people say about war, it's gross.
War is gross. That was a very funny line too. So we have this cold open with a couple of funny jokes. And we've already established Sam as like this playful, nice guy. Like, he's not being an asshole to the kid. He plays along with him, but he's also responsible. He's not giving the kid a drink. And then we roll into what we all, I'm sure, consider certainly one
of the Applebee's theme.
No. Well, yeah, they use it now. You're right. They do, which is annoying. Oh. But so they get into the Cheers theme, which has got to be absolutely one of the greatest TV themes in history. Yeah. It's just... What's so nice about it is it's a very old-fashioned theme. It has these pictures that go along with it that are also incredibly old-fashioned. They're, you know, like from the turn of the century, like 1900 kind of pictures. Yeah. And it sort of tells you, like, you're going to be seeing something a little bit old-fashioned here. Which
And this is the first point at which the show would now be instantly canceled.
Right. Yeah, right. Because some executive would say, like, it seems a little bit old and stodgy. We want something fresh and new.
It's just not what we're trying to do with the network. You know, like, could it be hashtag Cheers?
Hashtag Cheers. And maybe, like, it could open with some TikTok videos.
Yeah, or, you know, something by, like, dead mouse or just, is there a theme? Could we have, like, techno and just something, you know, you can tap your foot to a little more.
It's cool.
Yeah, I think
hit.
Taylor Swift would do a theme, maybe. That would be good. But then, so we get into the show itself, and we're back in the bar, as we are for the entire pilot, and we see, you know, the opening credits, and we get written and created by Glenn and Les Charles. They didn't want more Charles. That was a big mistake. They wanted less Charles, and they got it. So Glenn and Les
Charles. Where are the roofers when you need them?
I know, to drown out that joke that I had written in my phone. Why did I waste time writing that down? But so the creators, obviously, and this happens with pretty much all pilots, the people who create the show almost always write the pilot, and then they can sometimes just disappear. A lot
because
of writers,
they get money on every episode.
Yeah, they get money and they say, okay, writing staff, now the rest of you guys write this show forever. And Glenn and Les Charles kind of did that. I mean, you see their names in the first season a couple of times, but then they kind of just hand it off to the staff. But they did a fantastic job with this pilot, so they're worth mentioning. And then in this first scene, Diane Chambers walks in. So Diane Chambers, played by Shelley Long, and would become, you know, one of the main characters on this show. Diane comes in with her fiancé. She's about to be married to a very stuffy kind of professor guy named Sumner Sloan.
Yeah.
And they walk into the bar. They've got their luggage in hand. They're getting ready to go and get married in Barbados. And a little side note, this guy Sumner Sloan was played by an actor named Michael McGuire, who was in like the NBC stable of kind of character actors. I remember him from a Columbo years before. So it was NBC kind of did the thing, and a lot of the networks did, where they had their actors, and it kind of harkened back to the old studio system of Hollywood when actors had to work for a certain studio, MGM or, you know, Fox or whatever. And so this guy, Michael McGuire, and he plays this stuffy fiance very well in this pilot. So Diane and this guy come into the bar. Sam is there to see them, and they're kind of talking about, oh, we're in love, and Sam's kind of clocking them. And there's a moment where Sumner goes off to use the payphone, and Sam is off in the back somewhere. And the phone rings, like the phone behind the bar at Cheers rings. And Diane kind of does that thing where she looks around uncomfortably. And then she herself is forced to pick up the phone. So it's instantly like kind of drawing her in to this bar. Like she's becoming like a part of the bar right away. And it's also serves kind of a character point with Sam, because it's a woman, one of Sam's ladies, because Sam's this giant hunk, calling for Sam. And Sam is now enlisting Diane, like saying, like, I'm not here, tell her I'm not here. So we're seeing that Sam is a ladies' man.
Two points here.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
If okay. Already canceled because of diversity concerns right away.
Right. Right. Yes, yes.
But the second is that one of the things watching that really struck me was that the characters seem like adults in a way that doesn't exist now.
That's a
like
good point.
Even that Diane's the student, but now you'd go, she just seems like a 50-year-old or something. Yeah. Like everyone's dressed well, like the guy's wearing, I think, like a V-neck and a blazer. And if you tried to do this now, I don't know that anyone's adult enough. And everyone just looks at their phones. Like, I think that was the first point at which I just thought, you can't do this.
Yeah.
Right.
You're right. People were too engaged in life, which is great. I mean, it's fun to look back on. And you're totally right. It would not be believable today that anyone would act or comport themselves this way. That's a good point. So anyway, so Diane's enlisted in, you know, picking up the phone for Sam. And they, after she hangs up the phone, there's contentious banter between Sam and Diane about why are you avoiding this woman and how dare you enlist me. And this is a thing that I noticed a lot in this pilot. They established Sam and Diane's relationship that would last throughout her time on Cheers, which was like 5 or 6 seasons, in the very first lines of dialogue that they had between each other.
Like, it was amazing.
It was amazing. It worked so instantly. They had this dynamic established of like, Sam's the ladies' man and Diane does not approve, and they're going to lock horns about that for years. And it's a great dynamic, and they nailed it right away. So kudos to the writers for that. Then as the scene progresses and more people come into the bar, the writers are able to establish that the bar is an excellent place for a show, because people are just naturally kind of like spilling their guts to a bartender. It makes sense. Everybody kind of has a story to tell. I'm sure that was part of the pitch, and they really put that on display. And apropos of that, Diane and Sumner talk about how he proposed. Diane is sort of, you know, waxing poetic over how Sumner proposed to her. And here we have a great joke that I wanted to highlight. And these guys, obviously, they're very funny. They wrote great jokes, but they have an old-fashioned sense, just like the title, you know, the theme song kind of leads us into this old-fashioned style of comedy. They have almost like a Marx Brothers style of writing some of their jokes. So they wrote a joke here where Diane is describing how Sumner proposed, and she says this quote. He said, "Come with me and be my love, that we may new pleasures prove." And then she says, "That's done." And Sam says, "I certainly hope so," which is a great joke. That's a fantastic joke, because of course she's saying done as in John Donne, and has no idea what that means. So that could be a Groucho Marx line. "I certainly hope so." Now, this is where the writers start to lay in a little bit of plot here. We learn that Sumner, her fiancé, has to go back to his ex-wife's apartment to get the engagement ring from her to give to Diane. And he asks Sam, as he's about to leave, keep an eye on Diane. And this instantly furthers their connection. Like, there's a reason that these two are now interacting more. So that's just smart writing. He's like asked to become a part of this story. Yeah. And they really focus in on that at the beginning. Now, we start to meet the characters that we would come to know and love over the next few seasons. And the first one, and boy, it brings a tear to my eye because he was so great, was Coach.
Yeah.
Coach is much older. He's played by this actor, Nicholas Colasanto, who weirdly, like 2 years before this Cheers pilot, was in Raging Bull. So it's like he's got range. Like he can do lots of stuff. But in this show, they've created a very interesting device because they've already established that Sam Malone is kind of a caveman. He's not on Diane's level intellectually, and he's not, you know, he's just not that smart, and they kind of have played that up. And then in comes Coach, and Coach is like way more dumb than Sam. Right. So it's a good device for writers, honestly, to remember. Like, you don't want your main character, Sam Malone, to be like the biggest idiot, because then that's just, you know, of course, it works for Peter Griffin on Family Guy. It works for Homer. But in a live action show where you're kind of asked to fall in love with these characters, you're not going to fall in love with the guy who's the biggest idiot. Right. So you have Coach come in. And
they did the opposite with Frasier also, is that they thought it was unlikable for him to be such
the smartest.
Like a prince, you know, so then they invent Niles, who's like Frasier times eight.
That's a great point.
So it's also a great way to start thinking about dialogue and writing dialogue, is you instantly get a sense of like Sam lines are this, Coach lines are this, Diane lines are this more florid language. So as you start pitching, your script begins to take life just because everyone's not talking the same. So like one thing that over the course of years people have said is, if you can take a line from one character and give it to another character, it's a bad line.
You fail.
Because the characters should only be able to speak like themselves.
Totally right. And I was talking about this the other night actually with Tal, because we were talking about that very issue. And a great example of a show where you could never do that is The Golden Girls. The Golden Girls was a hilarious show, but those four characters were so well-defined. You could never just swap a joke and give, you know, Betty White's line to Rue McClanahan or whatever. Whereas on Family Guy, sometimes we switch the jokes. So, you know, maybe that's a sign that we're not quite into the character development part that we should be. But again, to get back to Cheers, so Coach enters, and he and Sam have a very funny back and forth where Coach is getting upset about the Patriots draft pick that year in the draft. And he says, you know, did they get a quarterback? Did they get a running back to scamper? No, they got a linebacker. And Sam says, well, I don't know. I've seen a linebacker change a game. He's like, yeah, you know, you're right. So he instantly does a 180. And you, again, within just four or five lines, the writers have established, like, who is Coach?
Yeah.
How do Sam and Coach interact with each other? Why is it funny? And they really nailed that right out of the gate. And Coach has many great lines throughout this pilot, some of which we'll talk about. So then Diane now is alone at the bar because her fiance has left, and she's reading poetry at the bar, which is like such a ballsy move. I mean, like, again, as you said, Goldie, you'd never see that today from anyone.
Right.
So she's sitting at the bar reading the poetry. She again attempts to distance herself from this whole bar crowd and Sam. And Sam again, like, teases her and sort of flirts with her. And again, the writers are reinforcing their dynamic. They're saying, what you saw a minute ago, that's going to keep happening. And then, like a house on fire, comes Carla.
Yeah.
So Carla is Rhea Perlman, married to Danny DeVito. We all know who she is. And she comes in and she's like, she's late for work. So we establish right away, like, she's a little bit of kind of a, you know, a rebel. And she comes in and she's complaining, like, he's like, so what? I'm late. So my kids were throwing up everywhere. You think you can handle it? Yeah, you come try over. And she's doing a monologue the whole time until she walks into the bathroom to change into her gear. And a very funny line, Sam turns to Coach and says, think I was too hard on her? Of course, he didn't get a word in edgewise, which is very, very funny. And Carla becomes, like, this show created half a dozen iconic characters, and Carla is certainly one of them. So when
it's
Carla,
also in the casting of her too that they'd never let you do is that looks like what a Boston waitress in a bar would look like, and today they'd be like, you know, can that be Selena Gomez?
Right.
You know, or someone with a lot. Can we get like someone who's big on TikTok and make them, and then they'll draw their fan base? It's like everything. The cart is driving the horse. Where you just go, what about this really solid actress who looks like what this person would look like in the real world and talks like them?
Yes.
Right. What about that?
Yes.
I was getting angry by this point at the imaginary
executive
notes in my head that would prevent me. And in a way, like, sometimes I feel prevent me from even starting something like this. Not that I could write Cheers if I wanted to, but you know what I'm saying? That you just go,
you could.
But it's enraging, like,
yes,
how much you just couldn't do that the basic componentry they wouldn't let you bring in.
No, you're right about Carla, 100%, and you're right about the next character who comes in who they would never cast today, which is Norm.
Yeah.
So yes. Norm, played by the great George Wendt, Jason Sudeikis' uncle, by the way, a little bit of trivia there.
Yeah, you taught me that.
You
can see
a little bit of nepotism there.
You can see a little resemblance in the nostril area, I've always found. So George Wendt comes in, and this was great. I was so happy to see this. From the very first episode, they did that thing where when he walks in, he says, "Hey, everybody," and the whole bar says, "Norm."
Right.
And then there's a back and forth joke where somebody says, "Norm, what do you know?" And he says, "Not enough." And then he sits down and gets a beer. So that is something that they would do every episode for 11 seasons. They locked themselves into this great thing that was in the pilot of, like, here comes a guy who we all love. He's here all the time. We know that because they're all shouting his name. And then somebody asks him a question, he has a joke back to them. And I could only picture the dozens, if not hundreds, of gag rooms that must have been sent off week after week to come up with great Norm lines, which they always seem to do.
My favorite was, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
Yes! Oh, my God. They must have left early that day. Yeah. They must have been like, we're done for the day. We nailed it. And this, there was an interesting thing here, too, which, again, it's just good writing, where Norm sits at the bar, and he instantly starts complaining about the Red Sox. So this has such a ring of authenticity to it, because we've now had characters complaining about the Patriots and the Red Sox. The writers are reminding us that we're in Boston. And in 1982, when the show was released, Boston was in the midst of an incredibly dark era in terms of their sports teams. The Red Sox hadn't won in over 60 years. The Patriots had never won. And these were the things that people talked about, and they still do in Boston bars. They still complain, even though we've won, you know, all these championships. They still get into the little stuff and complain about the team. So I thought
that being said,
yes,
if you remade the show today, I think it would have to be in Cleveland or Minnesota, because I think there's something less likable about Boston now, that it just doesn't exist anymore.
Yep.
That feeling of regional little brotherness to New York, and the almost class resentment of the Yankees who always beat our ass, where it's
the,
like,
underdog.
This corporate culture has democratized everything to the point where, and this was another larger point I had about thinking about trying to do this, is the homogeneity of everywhere now, where this type of regional thing, it's less and less, and everywhere has a restaurant that's like Tar and Feathers. It's something and something else, and it's all like wood-grilled vegetables and all.
Foraged.
It would be hard to capture a regional authenticity, because everywhere is just, wherever you go, you can kind of find the same stuff.
You're totally right. You're right. And like, nobody's, like, Boston's story was its own, if that makes sense, back at that time. Like, and now Boston's story is, everyone can know what's happening in Boston. Everyone can know what's happening in Chicago. Everyone can know what's happening. So like, nobody has their own little home base where they're sort of like only talking about these little things amongst themselves. It's all Stephen A. Smith is shouting about Tom Brady, you know, whatever it is. It's all national.
And now I feel like they'd try to superimpose on it some red versus blue thing at the bar that you would just go like, yeah, but these people wouldn't be at the same bar, and it's like, well, this place is the one place they would be, and it's like,
no,
now we're in on fucking Mars.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Yeah, I know. You're exactly right. And again, as we talked about with ER before, the problems of 1982 seem crazily small compared to the problems of today. So also at this moment, to get back to the show, when Norm is at the bar complaining about the Red Sox, we get into a great more character development, because we learn at this moment that Sam Malone himself used to pitch for the Red Sox, which I think is such a cool detail. I don't know that I had ever seen or heard of anything like that before on a show, which I thought was neat. And surprise, surprise, you learn that Coach was his coach, was his pitching coach in the minor leagues and then up at the Red Sox. So you, again, it's shorthand for years of a relationship that you now understand that these two have. And I think that that's a pretty cool thing. And also, everyone at the bar is kind of worships Sam because he owns the bar. He used to play for the Red Sox. And they're kind of puffing him up and trying to make Diane see like, hey, this is an important guy. And she's just not having it, which again is like excellent for their dynamic because you can see instantly that it frustrates Sam because he's used to everyone kind of like bowing down to what.
Especially women.
Yes, yeah. Especially women while you're down there, love. And now, and another great character detail, and kudos to the Charles brothers for making Sam a former drunk who now owns a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's just a cool.
Well, you just instantly get the sympathy.
Yeah, compassion.
You forgive the character his faults.
Yeah.
Because he's an alcoholic who works in a bar.
Yes, you're totally right. You feel for him, and you also feel like there's something more inside of him than just like a ladies' man. It gives him like a heart and a mind that you didn't know he had till that point.
And it also shows weakness.
Yes. You're 100% right. Yeah.
And but he also isn't, you know, like broken up about it, you know.
Right.
Today, I feel like they try to have him be like, you know, it is really hard for me. It's a daily struggle to have to,
that's a good point.
To do this thing, but I can't have a drop. But, you know, whereas he's just like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Okay.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And Danson had such a great breezy handsomeness. So he was like the perfect casting for this. He's like the best looking caveman that ever existed. and so here's where we go to our first act break commercial moment. And they don't go out on a joke, which was interesting. I don't know if they could do it again. Maybe they would change that. But they go out to commercial break on a story point where you kind of pointedly see Diane looking at her watch, knowing that her fiance has been away for a while at his ex-wife's place.
Yeah.
And she's concerned about it. And then you also see Sam clocking this. They have a shot of Sam like watching her. And it's nice. Like I say that maybe they should have ended on a joke, but it was also a nice moment because you can see in that moment that Sam cares about her as much as like, you know, he is probably attracted to her or wants her to worship him. He cares about her. So it's another moment where we like Sam. And so when we come back into Act Two, the writers give Carla, her character, a little more service. They have Carla talking with Diane, and we learn that Carla's kind of bitter and angry because she had a husband who left her and left her with the four kids. And so we kind of, again, like you said, Goldie, you excuse like her meanness and her biting remarks, and you kind of get it. It makes her sympathetic.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Why characters act the way they do is very important to audiences. And the writers really give you the why of why Carla is kind of nasty here. And that, you know, helps her character immensely. So now here we have another great joke spotlight. So again, the phone rings behind the bar. Coach picks it up and he says, cheers. And then he goes, is there an Ernie Pantuzzo here? And you hear a voice OS go, that's you, coach. And he goes, speaking. Which it's just, it's like beyond belief. It's not something that would happen in the real world.
I can already hear the executive go, I just don't feel this is grounded. Are we really supposed to believe he doesn't know his own name?
I know. And it's such a great joke. And
it's
just
so
the,
funny.
The pace and the timing of it, too, were so professional. It was just like right on it, fast-paced, funny. So God bless them for leaving that joke in. And by the way, whoever the executives were covering this, they left it in. So good choice, guys. So we, again, coach, lovable dimwit. We love it. Then they have this nice scene where I'm sure, again, Goldie, you and I can smell network notes. It felt like there was probably a note of like, show us why the bar is a good place to, you know, for everyone to get. Why is it a good place for stories? And how can we get everyone involved? So they do this. They have a scene where everyone at the bar is engaging on this topic, which I thought would be a good top five, by the way, of like, what are the sweatiest movies of all time? They're talking about it. And they're throwing out funny guesses. Rocky II, that's a funny guess. It's a noteworthy exchange for the series, because one of the people who chimes in about this is a man with a mustache in a postal uniform. Yeah. And of course, this is Cliff Clavin, who would eventually become possibly, you know, the most, certainly one of the most beloved sitcom characters of any show. But yeah. Here, he's uncredited in the pilot, and the writers, I don't think, really started to focus in on him until about halfway through the first season, and they kind of realized, okay, we got something special.
They were pushing a different guy, the guy with the beard.
Yes.
Was his name Gary or something?
I forget his name.
I wrote it down.
But at the end, when that guy turns around and goes, thanks for the help, Sam. Ron.
It was Ron.
Yeah, Cliff just rapidly kind of hit Ron in the head with a rock. Left.
He's like, bye, Ron.
And,
no. Yeah. Poor Ron.
Ron gone.
There you go, Ron gone. But so anyway, we get our first glimpse of Cliff Clavin, which is awesome. And he's also instantly in character. He's a know-it-all. He's got that thick accent. He's chiming in with something that he knows better. Just a side note here, the writers inserted a very small inside joke in this sweaty movies exchange where one of them shouts out body heat, and then they show a picture, a cut to Ted Danson kind of shaking his head. Ted Danson was in body heat.
I'm sure that's
why they did that, and they probably were all pleased with themselves when they did that. Anyway, so finally now, to continue the plot, the writers pick up the plot again. Sumner returns. With a funny little joke about the sweaty movies. Like, you know, Diane says, like, I've been sitting here in a debate about the sweatiest movies. And he instantly turns and goes, Cool Hand Luke, which is also a great sweaty movie. I like that they did that. Anyway, we learn that he couldn't get the ring from his ex-wife because, oh, she's such an incredible woman and her depth astounds me. There were all these very funny jokes. And here's another note, Goldie, to your point. No woman would ever put up with this today. Like the fact that Diane is putting up with this wishy-washy fiance who's going back to his exes and couldn't get the ring. Like it's instantly any kind of empowered woman.
Where's her agency? I want to feel Diane is in control of her own fate. I want to see Diane be a boss. Where's her boss bitch moment where everyone can go, you go, Diane. Like it's just like... Or she could just be waiting for an engagement ring on her way to Barbados.
Right.
I love that her boss bitch moment.
That's so true, though.
Oh, my God. Okay, so then in sort of a quick, this is where, like, writing-wise, this happened a little quick. So Sumner gets back to the bar, and then instantly the phone rings, and it's his ex-wife again saying she's changed. She's had a change of heart. And he can come back and get the ring. And you know, as an audience, we're already starting to see where this is headed. You know, it looks like bad news for Diane.
She doesn't see it, but everyone else does.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of like schmuck bait. Like, we know the story, obviously, is that they're not going to get married.
Right.
We're ahead of it.
Yes.
Right. It works, but...
Yeah, because we're in on it.
I mean, if you are honestly analyzing the writing and the story, you kind of go... That's the first point at which you go, yeah, I assume there's a deadline, you got to do it, and it worked, you got away with it, but it's actually objectively not great.
Yes, I totally agree with you. It's what we call, as you said, schmuck bait, or like kind of an unnecessary up and back, where you have him go out, come back, go out again. But also, for a little more story reinforcement, again, we see Sam... watch this, and he knows, like we see on his face, he's like us, the audience, he knows it's not going to work out, and he's concerned for Diane. He's already become protective of her, which I thought was kind of a nice moment. So now some time passes, and as we've already guessed, the bar is now pretty much empty. Only a passed out Norm with his head down on the bar and Diane remain.
Standard so- caution about alcohol abuse.
It's like, oh, God, standards today would be like, do we have to see the beer go to his mouth? Like,
oh, can he not be passed out? Can he just have fallen asleep and say, I was so tired, I couldn't finish my beer?
Can we refer to him as drowsy instead of drunk? Can he be drowsy? Let's replace all drunks with drowsy. So then Coach takes Norm and he's going to take Norm home, and there's a funny joke Norm says about grabbing a beer on the way home.
Right.
Yes,
that was nice. So then now we've reached this point where, okay, Diane is finally, she's kind of cracked open, and she opens her heart to Sam. And what I thought was nice about this moment is, if this were done today, it would have been two or three lines, and the writers in this moment really let it breathe. And it's something that I noticed about the show as I watched more episodes. The shows have great monologues, and they're not afraid to give their characters monologues. And right. This was a nice one.
They also had 4 to 4.5 more minutes to do it.
Totally right.
It would have been taken away from modern writers.
By commercials.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So each show, I think, used to be about 27 minutes, and now we're down to like 21.5. So yeah. They really have taken a chunk.
So now today it would be like, well, I guess Sumner's not coming back, huh?
Yep. I know, right.
That really burns me.
I'm going to do a TikTok about it.
Yeah.
So at this moment, Diane, you know, as I said, she emotionally breaks. She starts crying. It's not played for laughs, which I also thought was nice. We feel sympathy for her, and we see Sam again feel sympathy for her. So we then officially find out, surprise, surprise, through a phone call when Diane calls the airline, which nobody ever does anymore, but it was something that everybody did in the 80s. Call the airline. That just never happens. So we find out, yes, Sumner has in fact jetted off to Barbados with his ex-wife, leaving Diane in the dust. And it's in this moment that, you know, perhaps out of sympathy, Sam offers Diane a job at Cheers. It felt, when watching it, to me a little quick, as we say in the business, like it felt like he was very fast to offer her that job, and that felt a little odd.
Well, he did hedge it and sort of said, this may be crazy, but I guess you could work here if you like. So that in the performance, that's one of those things that in the writing versus the performance, definitely made it better than it was.
Totally right. Totally right. So yes, written seems a little fast, but the way he pulls it off, you know.
And she had also taken the initiative and picked up the phone earlier. So it was almost as if, you know,
she was
she'd already
to work there. Exactly. Yeah. Good point.
Yes.
So, and then there's a moment, and it's funny because I clocked a minute before that, even though it seemed clearly like closing time, suddenly a group of like 6, 70-year-old people come into
really
the bar.
Old.
Very
really old.
And not commented on at all.
No. But then you realize that there was a reason. It was all to set up Carla coming back to Sam with this big drink order. Like, hey, we need a gin and tonic and a Jack and soda and a vodka dry, you know, whatever. And then Sam has to say a minute later, like, oh, Carla, what was that order again? And Diane, on her way out, instantly like has total recall of the order and repeats it to Sam, which lets us know, oh, she'd be great at this.
She
may actually be destined to work in this bar. So that's why they brought those people in, which seemed like it made no sense.
That was great. Something that you just got to tip your cap to.
That's exactly the way I felt. I said,
and the performance, her performance of it too,
was great.
I got
almost
emotional
against herself at the end. Like, she kind of knew where this was leading and didn't want to repeat it, but she knew the answer.
Yes.
So she was saying it anyway.
Yeah, totally right. And I jotted down that it felt like a moment that they must have pitched on to get right, like, what does she nail? And they really nailed that. They got it. They got it right. So in that moment, you're all in on their Sam and Diane's working relationship and possibly their romantic relationship. And then they do, for the final scene of the pilot, it ends with, on a different day, with Diane taking the order of her first customers, a couple that's sitting there, and she comes in with this long explanation of, like, I never thought I'd be working here, and you're probably wondering why, and blah, blah, blah. And she gives a whole kind of long spiel, again, a monologue, to this couple that remains silent. And then when they speak up, we realize that they're foreign tourists who are, you know, looking for the police station because they've been robbed, right. which is, a funny blow to the thing. And so that's where the show ends. And boy, it was so fun to watch that pilot again. It really transports you back. Like, because now we're talking about a show that's literally 40 years ago was this pilot.
Yeah.
And the show itself was old fashioned. So you're watching something that's 40 years old that itself right. could have been made in, you know, the 50s or 60s or whatever. But boy, right. Glenn, Les Charles, you guys just, you nailed this pilot, you nailed the show. And it's become the paradigm. You know, it's interesting that we've gone through it with this executive mind of like picking it apart and kind of ruining it. But yet, executives do point to this pilot as something that like is aspirational and that writers right. should. How do we establish people's relationships a la Sam and Diane? Yeah. You know, Sam and Diane right. became shorthand for like Ross and Rachel. Sam and Diane were Ross and Rachel before right. Ross and Rachel.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've brought this up before, though, that they had less of a degree of difficulty than we do because of cell phones. Like, honestly, totally. If you look at that pilot now, it would be like, well, let's look at the ex-wife's Instagram and sort of see what's going on. And it's like, did you text Sumner? Is he texting yes. back? And right. you know, it just, everything, the screens have eaten everything. And it makes me wonder, is this type of thing even possible? It's like,
yeah,
the odds of seeing a great play now, it's like I guess you can, but by walking into the theater, you're surrendering to the fact that I'm going into something old fashioned, right?
Yes.
And yeah. I'm starting to wonder if that same thing is true of turning on a TV show, is you're just going to have to make the buy of like, I'm going into a little bit of a historical anomaly here.
Yes.
And not where we live now.
I know.
It made me sad, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And it's interesting because there's a solution, which is obviously like setting your show in the past, but that also feels like a device, whereas this show was set in present day. And it made you feel like a nice feeling about, you know, what was going on at the present. Whereas if you set a show in the past, you're already tinging it with sadness of like, this no longer exists.
And irrelevancy anymore. To some extent.
Totally right.
You just yeah. kind of go, well, you lose the ability to comment on what life is like now. And it's like, yeah, a certain percent of the audience wants escapism, but I don't know that they want it every week, hundreds of times over the course of 200 weeks, which, you know, you and I had that goal, and I think still kind of have it, of creating yes. that thing that gets remembered because of its epic production time.
Yep.
you know, and I've had two shows, and they've lasted. Each show I've had lasts one episode less than the previous time. I think there's been 9 episododes and 8 episodes.
Right. Yeah. Well, Dad's had an epic run.
Yeah, and it does make me wonder, like, that's the problem. How do you crack it
yes.
in a world where everyone has access to all information at all times?
I know. It is interesting. But yeah. I still believe somebody's going to do it. I don't know that it'll be me.
It
might
won't
be you.
Us.
Might
no.
be you. Could be you.
No. No.
I'm saying it. I'm calling it now. It's going to be you. Pressure's
I'm
on.
Calling it now. Tisn't.
Tisn't. Oh, tisn't. Another great Columbo quote. And a little side note about Cheers. I may have mentioned this on the show before, but you can watch it on Paramount Plus. And Paramount Plus is like tailor-made for old coots like you and me, Goldie. But
if you wanted to trap me in a net, you could leave Paramount Plus open on the homepage. I'd be like, Love Boat, Cheers. And then it's like a net comes down and catches me. God fucking damn it. Hawaii 5-0. All the Rockford Files.
Yeah, it's great. They do have a kind of a great old guy lineup. But
yeah, it's our Turner Classic Movies.
Yes.
Right? Like, well, like my mom is like, I saw the most wonderful movie on Turner Classic Movies. And then she goes on to describe the most boring black and white headache you've ever heard of. When you go, why the fuck would you watch that with everything available to you? But it's, yep. that's how I feel about It's like Love Boat is my Xanax.
Yes, I totally agree. That's just, yeah, it's so relaxing from the opening theme. But I will say with Cheers, if you keep watching and watch through to episode number 3, my mom and sister are in the bumper, like the B-roll that they show outside of the bar, like where people are walking past. My mom and sister are wearing a red dress and a blue dress. They use them a lot. Like in season one and two, when they rolled the bumpers, it was oftentimes we would tune in and be like, there's Mom and Liz. Like they're walking into the bar.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
But you know, there's one thing I noticed that I never really thought that much about, but it got the gears turning, was the fact that I wonder why it was downstairs.
I wonder if that's just the natural spot of that bar. I don't know.
It's really kind of weird.
Well, you know what? They didn't have to handle windows seeing anything outside.
I think that's why. And like maybe to hide people coming in so you don't see them, you know, through the window.
Right. Yeah, it must be because they didn't want to show traffic or pedestrians, or they didn't want to deal with any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I had a thing that I noticed with Sam, the fact that they made him a relief pitcher that, you know, who was an alcoholic, his whole career was about saving the game, saving the pitcher.
That's great.
And then he opens up this bar and he's literally, you know, hey coach, take Norm home. And he's like, he has this thing about saving people. It's just ingrained.
JC, that was the best point made the whole
That's
show.
Brilliant.
Right there. That's so great.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, we should just let you take over from the beginning. What the hell were we talking about?
How did she get in a word in edgewise with these two idiots?
I know. God. Well, okay. Note to self. Let's let JC
check
talk
in with
more.
JC
might have actually
any
something.
Any smart thoughts, JC?
You want to show us up with your big brain again, JC? That's a great point. Anyway, it was so fun.
Thanks.
To watch again, and now I'm going to keep watching the show because, boy, they hooked me again.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a fun theme, and it was fun as writers to look at something, and to have JC swoop in with the best point there at the end was also just a nice victory. But now let's get into the portion of the show that we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
That's so should I go first because I was the one who came up with this topic?
Yes, yeah. And at the end of Top Fives, we'll talk, we'll tease next week's. But yeah, go ahead, Colby.
Yeah. So I came up with the really broad topic. It was top five beverages. just cast a wide net, see what happens. So here are my top five.
All right.
Number five, it's not glamorous, gets the job done. I'm talking water.
I wondered if you were going to have that.
Full glass of water. It's not winning any trophies, but on the other hand, when
it's
you need it,
lives. It's saving
and you
lives.
Get it, you're happy.
Yes,
yeah.
You're saving
I didn't put
lives.
It on there, but I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree.
Number four,
I wish I put it on.
Chocolate milkshake.
Oh, very good.
Had that. Yep. Oh.
Yeah, it's not an everyday.
Nope.
But as
it's
a treat,
good.
Fucking great.
Now here's where I get a little bit racy.
Ooh.
A newcomer on the scene.
Oh.
A relative newcomer. And it's made quite a splash. I'm talking number three, oat milk.
Oh yeah.
Why?
Good
milk
call.
Is gross.
Yeah.
It makes your body do weird things.
It's from the teat of a cow.
Is really good and doesn't make your body do weird things.
Right.
You're right.
Come from
You're
the
right.
There you go, oat milk. Now, number two, I do not drink alcohol anymore. I don't know whether that's permanent or not, but I would be remiss if I didn't recognize the power of a frozen margarita.
Ooh, salted rim or no?
And you'd hate to be a frozen margarita.
The
around
slow
this
acidic burn buzz of it taking over your body. Oh, there's nothing like it. And number one, can't get through the day without it. Best part of the day.
Yeah.
Indisputably, yes. Coffee.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's a great list. Great list. Well said.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
I'll JC, you get to go last today because of that fantastic point you made. Okay, here we go. And Goldie, I'm sure you flirted with this one. My number five is Schweppes ginger ale.
Oh.
The Jewish
effervescence.
The Jewish panacea. Anything that was wrong, you have a warm glass of Schweppes, got better. And here I sort of veered off a little bit from, because Goldie, you and I had some overlap. Number four for me, Country Time Pink Lemonade. Oh, did I love that growing up. just over scooping because you could make it yourself.
So much sugar.
So much. So much. But I fell hard for the commercials with that quaint old guy sitting on the porch. How about a glass of country time? Like, I bought that hook, line, and sinker.
How about you come inside, little boy?
All right. We don't know. That was never proven.
You like hard candies?
I got something hard for you. All right. Number three, Goldie, we're in lockstep here. Number three for me was a chocolate fribble, which is a chocolate milkshake. It's basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. So we love that.
Maybe you dip your fries in it.
Yeah. Great. Ooh. What a treat. What a treat that is. Cool. Number two for me was coffee. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. Love coffee. You need it. Need it to get the troops moving every morning. Okay. Number one for me was the one, the minute you said this, this was just etched in stone. Coke is it. Coca-Cola classic. Yeah. Never a better drink has been devised. Coke on ice, just delish. Wow. That's my list, yes. And I stand by it. I stand by every word.
It's a good list. Great. Okay, so my top five, I will say I mostly drink just water and my number three on this list, but whatever. These are my list. Number five is the Boylan's cream soda.
Okay.
God, you're always coming at these like with a potato chip thing.
I know,
it's
weird.
It's always a boutique.
I'm weird. Like, well, you know, maybe the rest aren't so much, but this is a little boutique-y. This one is Mexican Coke because they use the cane sugar.
The sugars are very good.
Cane sugar.
The bottle is very satisfying.
Worth it for the bottle.
Yes. My number three is what I have every morning. Yerba mate, because I don't drink coffee. I don't drink coffee. So it's the type of caffeine that it supplies to
I'm sorry, can we
veins.
Get that name again?
Yerba mate.
What is it?
It's a tea. It's a usually I buy it in a can, it has so much sugar, but in Brazil they have a gourd where you make it every day and they, you know, you add hot water, and it's actually a ritualistic process for a lot of people. But I love the matin, like the way it hits, it's a gradual slope as opposed to a peak that you get from coffee.
Right. So, not me. I like to go from way too tired to instant panic.
I know. It didn't work for me. It stopped working for me. That's why I had to switch. Okay, so number two, maybe a little boring, but it's fresh squeezed orange juice. And then I know, yes.
That's good.
Know.
That's no, that's good. That's good. That's good. I considered that. I considered that.
Yeah. And my number one is an Arnold Palmer. I love a good Arnold Palmer.
Having fun. It's kind of two drinks, as we know.
But it's fun, dude. It's fun.
We'll allow it. That's a great list. Great list. And now, now we are going to tease next week's top five, which is JC's choice. And it is...
Okay, so next week's top five are top five songs to air play to, like air drum, air bass, not lip sync, but air drum or bass to.
Air instrument.
Keyboard. Air like instrument,
it.
Yes.
I love that. That's very specific. Yes. That's
I'm already cool. It might my list might be all Rush.
that's a good thought. Yeah, no, a couple songs were instantly leaping to mind. So that's a fun one. So you can tune in for that next week. And by the way, you know, my dad was one of the people who was saying we should announce the top five for next week. But then of course when we did it, he said, "You did it wrong." And so he said that we should encourage listeners to send in their own top fives.
No.
And then he said, but then he said, "I don't know that you ever give out your email address." I said, "Dad, we do it like three times a show." Anyway.
Dad.
But you don't want people to do that? Goldie, you said no.
Well, they can, but it's like, it just, now I'm an editor. I'm working more.
No. But all we do is just we'd read a couple fun ones after we do ours.
If
we want it. Okay.
If anything pops.
Yes.
I think we've been very generous and truthful about putting stuff on the show. It's
totally.
Good. And then other stuff comes in. I'm grateful for it. But not everything's for air, guys.
No.
Yeah.
It all gets read, though. It does all get read. And we appreciate it all.
Absolutely. So again, that's a typical disgusting display at gmail.com. If you want to send in any thoughts, criticisms, praise, or even maybe a top five, feel free to do so. Feel free to do so. And now we're going to feel free to end the show on something we like to call a high note. Thank you, Tom Gamble. It's always a half second longer than I think it's going to be. And that's where the fun is. Who wants to go first with this?
I'll go first.
Go ahead.
My high note is tomorrow is my dad's birthday.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And he is a wonderful human being. He listens to our podcast. He's watching The Sopranos right now. And he's just a beautiful guy.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Mm,
yeah. That's great. Hopefully he's going to do a better job of finishing The Sopranos than some people I know.
I know. I know. We got to watch Cheers now. So, yeah.
Mine's very quick, and it's stupid and cute. We had a friend of ours who pointed out that last week my high note was The Bachelor, and Goldie's was Frontline Workers. So there was a little that was Susanna Mako, so thank you for pointing that out. There's a little gulf between it, and I'm prepared to do that again, and that we'll have it back-to-back. So my high note, this is so stupid, is that I told a joke about turtles and Johnny jokes, but I read the story where the two turtles that Sylvester Stallone takes in Rocky from the pet store, he's still got them and they're still alive. Cuff and Link, and
that's
he did a post
sweet.
With a picture of the two of them, which I thought was just very cool. And I love Rocky so much, so that was awesome to see.
That's pretty sweet.
My high note is Queer Eye is back.
Oh,
I just love
yes.
it.
Cool.
Such a big fan of Bobby. Like, I just specifically Bobby.
He's the
who, like, everyone comes in and it's like, Tan's like, here's a sweater, you know, and Anthony's like, I'll teach you to make guacamole for the meeting. And then it's like, and here's an entire new house.
Go, Bobby.
You know, like, he worked so hard. And then, you know, Karamo is what I call, he's like a home run hitter. He's like the Rob Deere Cecil Fielder of the show. Like, he just takes big cuts. A lot of times it's a total miss. It's like, I'm going to write your name on this balloon and I want you to shoot it with an arrow, you know? And you're like, all right, man, I don't know. And like, they hit, he does hit. And what he does is very meaningful, but I enjoy it on two levels. One is I think like it's a beautiful thing and what they do for these people to watch our transformation is great. But the other is to, in my mind, compose what must be the behind the scenes vibe of Bobby just watching everyone else versus what he does every week.
I know, and Bobby watches the one guy make a PB&J with the crust cut off. And he's like, great, I got to go build an addition to this guy's house.
Yeah. But anyway, I think they do a great job.
They
I
do. That's, an, we, that's
I'm critical of a lot of things, and I but I you praise where praise is due.
Yes. Yes. No, it's a great show and a great way to end our show. So thank you all for listening. We had a fun time doing it. And the construction workers are back right on cue. Thank you all for listening. Thank you two for being awesome. And
thank
we
you.
Will talk to you next week.
Disgusting.
And it stops right now.
Note to self.